And so we started thinking a bit more creatively about how could we achieve some of those outcomes without actually having to go to the expense and complexity of undertaking a co-housing development. And so we thought about, well, what existing housing stock is there already? And are there ways that we could facilitate women to share housing with each other using existing homes?
That was Chloe Howarth on the Home Share for Her program located in the Nelson-Tasman region. The program addresses the lack of affordable housing and the lack of available housing for single women. Because in our region, according to a Stuff article in April 23, it says low wages and expensive housing make the Nelson-Tasman area unaffordable, with our housing being the third worst in the country, with some people spending over 50% of their income on housing. But the other thing that it does is it mitigates the problems that can come up when people share a living space together, as well as help women just have the best possible living situation and share the home in a way that's equal, where everyone living there feels like the house really is their home. Well, that's what we're going to talk about today in our story about Home Share for Her. Kia ora and welcome to the Homefulness Show. I'm your host, Zola Rose, located in Aotearoa, New Zealand. We believe housing can be a means for regenerative placemaking to create affordable and sustainable homes and neighborhoods developed in collaboration with the communities that live there. We'll be exploring different housing models and neighborhood designs and innovation in energy, water, waste, construction, land use, and food systems. We showcase housing policies, finance, funding, and community engagement to unlock this potential. This show aims to empower you with knowledge, resources, and networks to support you in creating great places to live. Come join us as we bring to life the more beautiful housing that we know is possible. I have got Chloe Howarth from Home Share for Her as a guest today on the Homefulness Show, sharing with us all that there is to know about it, since it's a new program and we want to let others know about how it works, and hopefully it can be replicated and help other people who have similar needs around housing, and particularly housing for women, which is a really, really big need in Aotearoa, but I know around the world. So, Chloe, thanks for coming into the studio today.
Thanks, Zola. Good to be here.
I'd always like to start with a bit of background on you as a person. And just going back in time, if you could describe what made home for you growing up feel like home, and then also transitioning into now, what makes your home feel like home now?
Great questions to lead off with. I'm really fortunate to have grown up in a range of homes with a fairly stable family environment. I was born in Otutahi in Christchurch, and then moved to Australia with my mum and stepfather when I was about 8. And home to me has always been really a place where you can be yourself and feel safe, and ideally really have little places where you can personalise it and make it your own, whether that's a little patch of the garden, or if you're in a home that you own or where you're able to paint the walls, being able to personalise the space. Mm-hmm. And I think even when I was a small child, I had that opportunity by little areas I played with out in the garden or that sort of thing, where it feels like your own space where you have control of how it looks or how it feels. And outdoors has been really important to me. So I've always loved to have a little patch of garden, even in times when I've lived in an apartment, having a little bit of balcony space where I can create a little environment out there has been really important. And I think especially that connection to land and to living things. So external to the four walls of the house itself, but that's what makes a home feel like a home to me.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I also share that wanting to have nature involved in my home space in some way, whether it's collecting food or growing things has always been wherever I am.
Yeah, I think I can really appreciate Indigenous concepts of connection with land and the importance of that. I mean, I've lived in different environments in different countries that have felt very different, but it feels like it's really a part of me being in the outdoors and being able to have that connection.
And so leading into where you're living now, is that able to be part of your home?
Yeah. So I grew up in Canberra in Australia, having moved there with my mum. And then 5 years ago, moved back to Aotearoa with my partner and children. And part of that move for me was actually about feeling more at home in the environment in New Zealand, in the natural environment. And so that was one of the main drivers for relocating back here was for that sort of outdoor lifestyle. And so my current home setup is I'm in a 3-bedroom house with my partner and children. We're really fortunate to be living on land in a semi-rural environment with extended family next door as part of a bigger parcel of land. So we've got quite a nice family environment.
Oh,
well.
Wonderful. Yeah, that extended family, I'm hearing more about that intergenerational desire to have either children or parents. In my future, I would like for my now young adult children to eventually settle close to me. I'm nowhere near to having grandchildren, I'm sure, but it's already in my future that I would love to be able to have that kind of a setup as well.
Yeah, it's quite a communal type feel. It's really lovely. As a lifestyle now for a young family, I think it's pretty good. So yeah, it's probably as ideal as it gets for me.
Yeah, right, so your children have their grandparents.
Yeah, and auntie and uncle as well.
So how did you get interested in housing as like a professional?
There's a lot to talk about there, really. When I think back about how did I get into it, I think about my professional background. But actually, before that, going back even further, one of my first jobs when I was still at school, when I was about 15, was working as a weekend receptionist for a real estate agent. And so from the age of about 15, probably until I was in my early 20s, I worked part-time on weekends and school holidays and uni holidays for real estate agents. And I think from a very early age, therefore, I had quite an awareness about the housing market and what it meant to be a tenant and what it meant to be a landlord, what it meant to be a home buyer and a home seller. And so from a pretty early age, I was fairly determined that I wanted to own a home of my own. And so I pretty much started saving from that age, really.
Wow, very aspirational.
Yeah, probably a bit unusual at that age, but it was just something that I could really see the differences between what it meant for people that were secure in their housing and what it meant for people who weren't. Through the people that I met coming through the front door when I worked for the real estate agent, you know, tenants who were struggling to pay their rent. This was sort of in the early 90s, I guess, when it was the recession in Australia, people needing to sell homes that they could no longer afford. That whole dynamic, I think, really shaped my thinking from a fairly young age. Forward on a bit further from that, in more recent times, as in the last 20 years, my professional background has really been in housing and urban development. So in Australia, I worked for both local and central governments for quite a while in a range of roles, urban planning, land development, city renewal projects, that sort of thing. And some of my time in central government in Australia was also in Indigenous housing and infrastructure, regional and remote Aboriginal communities in Australia. So I got to see a whole lot of other things through that work as well. And I think that probably sparked my thinking even further around what it means to have a secure, safe, stable place to live and the differences in outcomes across the full spectrum of health, education, life expectancy, and just life outcomes for people who have decent housing and people who don't, and what a difference that makes. So I think that's probably what sparked my passion, and things have just evolved from there. And so I've always really worked in and out of housing and planning and property development type.
And so how did the home share for her, how did you get pulled into that?
So a while ago in Nelson, there was a forum called What is a Home, which was a community-run forum run by Community Action Nelson to generate ideas about affordable housing and different housing options in Nelson, Tasman. And there was a lot of discussion at that forum. That was just after we'd moved to Nelson, actually, and so I was keen to build a bit of a network and to meet some people that were working in the space. So I went along to that. And there was a lot of discussion there, particularly among women, actually, about ideas of co-housing and a lot of enthusiasm to try and get some co-housing projects off the ground, recognising, of course, that is a really complex thing to try and do. And so we started thinking a bit more creatively about how could we achieve some of those outcomes without actually having to go to the expense and complexity of undertaking a co-housing development. And so we thought about, well, what existing housing stock is there already? And are there ways that we could facilitate women to share housing with each other using existing homes? And so at the same time as that forum was going on, we talked a bit to the Nelson Women's Centre, who had been getting an increasing number of inquiries from women looking for homes and experiencing loneliness, because this was just around the sort of COVID times as well, where there was a lot of social isolation. So there was that dynamic going on as well. And so three of us in partnership set up Home Share for Her as a concept of a platform where we could facilitate matches between women to share housing and to support them to do that with the right resources and a bit of advice and just a place, an online place for them to meet each other and to form those relationships. So that was the evolution of Home Share for Her. Since that original idea, the website has come a long way and we've evolved it a bit. And I think we're really starting to get some success with it now, which is really exciting.
Oh, well, that's great. So when did you launch it?
So the Home Share for Her itself launched in 2022, but that was before we had a fully functional website. At that point, we were manually trying to match women with each other and facilitate catch-ups and that sort of thing. The new website launched a year ago, so we're officially 1 year old now. And the new website, it's an online way for women to message each other, to publish their profiles and to make matches online themselves without us needing to do it manually. Still with some support from us in the background, though, and some resources and that sort of thing. So officially a year with the new website.
Okay. And yep. That's ring-fenced to Nelson. Or how far do you say that you would do the matchmaking for?
At the moment, it's Nelson Tasman. And one of the reasons that we've done that is that we really need a critical mass of women registering to be able to match with each other. If we end up with people in far-flung places, they're just not going to get matches with each other. So we really want to make sure it's successful in this region first. And the majority of women registering probably are in central Nelson and Stoke and Richmond. There's not much further out in Tasman than that at the moment. We would like there to be, but we're really focused at the moment on just getting it up and running well in Nelson Tasman with the idea that we could then expand it out to other regions and Aotearoa as well.
Well, that's great. And there's so much of a need for it here in Nelson area because that's where a lot of the work is, and in Richmond as well. So it makes sense to do it starting in these more populated areas where can find each other.
Yeah.
And then so you're still kind of in a pilot phase, then it sounds like you're still working out how does it work to get people to know each other? How does it work when people get to know each other? And you've had some placements as well and some feedback perhaps on how it's been going living together?
Yeah, we've had a lot of feedback from people who've participated, people who've matched with each other, and people who are just using the website and giving us feedback on the functionality of that. So that's been really great, and we're still making some tweaks and fine-tuning things. But at the moment, we've probably got about 180 women registered on the website. They don't all have their profiles published at the moment. Some of them have just hidden their profiles, but they're out there and scrolling, I suppose. But at the moment, there's about 23 published home offers from homeowners and 57 published profiles from home seekers, so women looking for a place. And we've had 5 successful matches so far, and hopefully another couple underway in various phases of matching up as well. And one of the other things we can see through our website is because women can message each other through the website, we can see there's a whole lot of conversations and connections that are being made between the people that are registered on the website. So hopefully some of those will lead to some further matches.
So is it kept that the communications is all online, so it's sort of a safe space and encouraging not to go offline until maybe a first meeting or something like
that? Yeah, that's right. So it is just online through the website. People get a notification via their email that there's a message for them and to log into the website to see their messages. We encourage women to first of all make contact through the website, and then the next step might be meeting for a coffee somewhere in a public place and getting to know each other that way first. We've got some guidance on sort of step by step how to go about it. We've also just run a couple of months ago a successful meetup event, which was a group sort of afternoon tea where everyone who was registered was invited to come along for an informal get together. We got a lot of really good feedback from that. So we're about to run another one of those actually, and we're keen to make that a regular thing because I think that's quite a nice way for women who either are registered or are thinking about it to come along, find out a bit more, and just have that face-to-face contact with the people who are behind it and with the people who are registered and who they might be talking with online, just to make it a bit more real.
Yeah, and it helps that it's facilitated, that you're there. It's a container to hold that. And so what are the kinds of people who are participating in this? Who would be somebody who would want to share their house, and then who might be looking for a house
A whole range, actually. We've got big range of ages of women who are registered from 18 through to 80, really. A lot of the homeowners are older women who are looking for some help around the house or the garden or for some company. A lot of them the homeowners are women who have shared before and just really like that dynamic. Occasionally it's women who are needing financial support really in paying their mortgages or paying their rent, and that's obviously a main driver for a lot of women. The women that are looking for places, a real mix of ages there as well, and some of them are professional women who are in Nelson for work temporarily and looking for somewhere that's longer than Airbnb type arrangement. There's some younger women that are students, and then there's some older women that would obviously struggle to pay rent on their own because there's not many options for smaller affordable homes for single women in the region, really.
So it could be, is there an intention to have an intergenerational matchmaking, or it could be even a younger woman owning a home looking for another woman within her age range?
All of that. Oh. We would love to see some intergenerational matches happening. We haven't had much of that so far, to be honest. It's mainly been women drawn to other women of similar demographic and age, seems to be where a lot of the compatibility is. But we would love to see any and all of that. Any combinations, really.
Yeah, and anything around parenting? Is there anything specific for parents looking with for other children, maybe, to have a combined family kind of a thing?
We do have a few women registered who have children as well, and I think that's definitely a dynamic that could work. And some of our inspiration for setting up this website was some overseas platforms which are specifically for single parents matching with each other to share housing and care of children and that sort of thing. We haven't had that many women with children registering yet, but it's certainly an option, and I can see that working really well for some households.
And in terms of being able to sift through, how do people know how they align? Do you have a questionnaire or a way for people to state what their key values and interests, and if they're a night owl or, you know, those
yeah.
kinds of things?
So on our website, when people register, they create a profile for themselves, and we do review those to make sure that what's going up is appropriate. And if there's not enough information, we let them know. Or if there's too much information, we let them know as well. It's sort of a fine balance between keeping a bit private, but at the same time sharing enough about yourself to be able to know, for other women to be able to know if you're likely to be a good match. So the initial profiles on the website have some limited information about what their interests might be, what sort of home sharer it might be that they're looking for. We also have a questionnaire document on our website under our resources, which is a list of questions to ask each other when you first meet up or via email, which really goes into that things around values and your lifestyle and what hours you keep and if there's anything important about how you cook in your kitchen or particular parts of the house you do want to share or don't want to share and all those sorts of things.
And so is it assumed that it will be really a home share? It's not just the person only has their bedroom and the rest of the house then they have to sort of ask permission to use? Is it sort of assumed that the rest of the house is really equal rights to the other parts of the house?
The intention is that it is a genuine sharing arrangement. Mm. Some of the homes that are listed are actually separate granny flat type setups or a downstairs area that's fairly self-contained. And there's situations as well where someone has perhaps a room where they have their particular hobby set up that might be off limits. But the general intention is that it's a genuine sharing arrangement.
Mm, yeah, that feels better to know you're renting a home rather than just having the one bedroom as your space.
Yeah.
And of course, there needs to be how people are going to be able to invite guests over, all of that. That would lead into my next question. Is there any guidelines around how people can have those discussions about an eventuality of, oh, do you have a boyfriend and might he be wanting to come over,
that
or grandchildren and would they might be wanting to come over, and how does that work?
That is one of the questions in our questionnaire actually, is do you have any other significant people in your life that might stay over or be regular visitors? And we just really encourage people to be upfront about that, but also recognising that people's circumstances change and there might not be someone, a significant other in the short term, and maybe later on there is. So we have a guide to communication in home sharing as one of the resources on our website, which is really about encouraging those upfront conversations before an issue actually arises, being able to have an open communication between the sharers, I think is really key.
Yeah, that could get really tricky, I guess, if it hasn't been sort of brought up to begin with as difficult conversations, then being able to breach that later on. So I guess getting into that habit of having those conversations regularly, so if there is any shifts in circumstances, it's not a surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before we came on air, the conversation we were just having about the person you knew that they regularly talk to with their home sharer.
Yes, it's a person who's a specialist in nonviolent communication or compassionate communication, and they use that person every 2 months to hold a conversation where they can bring up things that might be a little bit feeling vulnerable or sensitive to say. Well, you're not sure how the other person is going to react. And that reflective listening can be done, and that woman helps to model and maybe pull out what is maybe not being said, you know, really having that be a guided and facilitated discussion. So they've built that in and agreed to that in advance, that every 2 months they'll have an afternoon of that facilitated discussion.
I think that's a fantastic idea. And that's one I hope other people will borrow that idea as well, actually being proactive about having those conversations before there's a problem, but just scheduling it in every 2 months or however often it is.
Yeah, and I think the other thing they did was agree on who that would be, who would be their facilitator. So it wasn't going to be from a friend of one of them who might be a bit biased. So they chose a professional who's skilled, neutral and skilled in doing that kind of thing. And so that's what I would also like. I mean, for everybody, anybody in any sort of a relationship actually could use such a service.
Absolutely.
Parents with children, couples, intergenerational living.
Yeah.
And so it's only been about a year that has there been a full year then that there has been a living match?
So we haven't had a living match for a full year. Our website has been live for just about a year, but the living matches have been shorter than that. And only fairly recently, probably in the last 6 months, is when the matches have been starting to happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in terms of feedback of how it's working for the renter or the homeowner, have you been able to get some feedback?
A little bit. At the moment, we've actually got someone doing an external evaluation for us who is going to be interviewing those women to get some feedback, some more detailed feedback for us. So we haven't probed them too much yet. We've been really conscious of wanting to just let them settle in and maintain their privacy a bit without hassling them too much about answering our questions. But we're really hoping to get a bit more of that feedback through the external evaluator who's looking at our program.
Yeah, and hopefully they know they're part of a pilot and that any input they give is going to help it just to be better for other people.
Yes, and when we have asked for feedback, the women who are participating have been really generous so far in providing us with their thoughts and suggestions. And so that's fantastic. I think they all understand that they are part of the pilot and helping to shape this service for other women in the future.
That's really right, valuable. Because the whole country really does need it. So that's a wonderful service that they're giving. Their feedback
is a
big piece of that. And so in terms of funding, because I suspect that this is a charity or registered charity, and so how has it been funded? How do you sustain yourself? Just to say, what is your role, just to define that, and then how are you able to sustain?
So I'm one of the co-founders, and I'm a current trustee of Home Share for Her. So we've got three other trustees and one part-time coordinator, and our coordinator, Lindsay, does a fantastic job of the day-to-day, answering emails and checking the registrations as they come through and organising advertising for us and all those sorts of. The way we're funded is we're operating as a totally free service. So we are a charitable trust that we've set up. And so we're fully grant funded at the moment. Our aspiration is that in the future, as we grow, we would like to see a bit more sponsorship as well, perhaps from local businesses.
So who are the funders?
Well, at the moment, we've been really fortunate to be generously supported by Office for Seniors, who are part of Ministry for Social Development. And they've actually been piloting their own home share scheme up in Auckland, which is to match older people with younger people to share housing. So it's really lovely to partner with them on our program as well and to do a bit of joint comparison and evaluation together. So they're one of our funders. Another major funder at the moment is the Rata Foundation. In the past, we've also been funded when we first set up by Department of Internal Affairs and the Ministry for Women and Tyndall Foundation. So that's how we've managed to do it so far. And as we go into the future, hopefully we'll be able to continue with some grant funding and also find some other avenues, perhaps through corporate sponsorship and that sort of thing.
That's fantastic to have had at least 5 funders so far that see the benefit of this. And I'm sure that will attract other sponsors and funders as well.
I hope so.
So we can continue to offer the service for free.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
So in terms of this differing from the usual Trade Me or advertising on Facebook that people do for rooms to rent, how would you say, what is a benefit of being part of HomeShare for Her versus just going through the usual channels?
Well, I think one of our original ideas was that there's a lot of women who might be a bit intimidated by advertising on Facebook or Trade Me, particularly older women who perhaps aren't that tech savvy. I mean, that said, we do also have an online platform, but we like to think ours is a little bit more exclusive and a bit safeguarded, but also because we have our coordinator answering questions via email and checking the profiles and just there to help women through the process. It's a bit less intimidating perhaps for some women than the other channels. And also the fact that we have things like these face-to-face meetup events is obviously something that's a bit different.
So people might even get matched at that event, do you think?
I would like to think so, actually. I think after our last event, we had a couple of successful matches. And I think having that face-to-face opportunity makes the world of difference to a lot of people rather than it just being a messaging online.
And have there been anyone say, what about us men? I know I used to work for a women's centre and every once in a while there'd somebody say, but what about the men?
Yeah, for sure. We've had those questions. And look, our response is always that we're more than happy to share our model with any other groups that would like to set up something similar. This one was obviously set up specifically as a response for women because it was born out of the Nelson Women's Centre and the housing forums that women were leading at the time in the region. So that's just where this one originated. But I'm sure there would be plenty of opportunity for other groups to have this sort of model as well.
Because the website software, I think, might be quite specific and you've crafted all the questions and the way that you are coordinating and bringing these groups together, the questions that you're asking is feedback, all of that would be so easy to come to you rather than reinventing it. So
of course, for
any groups that are interested in taking it.
We have also had interest from other groups outside this region who would like to see us expand elsewhere. And that is something we would love to do. And hopefully, just with a little bit more time bedding down our systems and processes in this region, we'll be ready to do that. And what we'd love to do is, when we are ready to go with that, is to perhaps connect up with some already established groups in other regions, whether it's women's centres or citizens advice bureaus or that sort of thing, who might be able to host us in another region, because we really do need an on-the-ground coordinator for our model to work.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm. So already you're getting interest.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
And so that leads me into my next question is for the future. I hear an expansion, but is there any other things that are included in your future visioning?
In terms of the impact that we're wanting to have, it's really just about providing this as a viable option for women as an alternative to all the other various housing options that are out there, being able to really empower women to mutually support each other through home sharing. And the bigger picture there, I suppose, is taking pressure off the public housing system, because a lot of the women who are system is really geared for, they're not women who are in crisis. I mean, that's quite a different thing. But women who could fall into crisis if they don't actually find somewhere stable and affordable to live. And so we're really hoping that by providing this service, we're providing a solution for that whole cohort of women. And then that takes the pressure off other parts of the housing system.
Mm-hmm. And just going back to that security, I know I've been in the position a few times of renting from someone already living in the home, and they've only wanted to do a roommate agreement rather than a tenant agreement. Mm. And that has left me quite insecure, because the tenancy laws only cover a tenancy agreement, not roommate. In fact, as a roommate, you have virtually no rights. So what are you encouraging then, that women do a tenancy agreement so that the law can cover them?
Well, unfortunately, home sharing isn't covered by tenancy law, and we did look into this. So a tenancy agreement, my understanding is that by law it can't apply to a situation where the homeowner is living in the house as well. Mm-hmm. It's where it's a standalone dwelling, or not necessarily standalone, but it's a self-contained dwelling and the homeowner isn't living there is where tenancy law applies. Mm-hmm. So we do have on our website a range of different types of sharing agreements, and depending on the situation, there'll be different laws that apply. So if, for example, it's someone who doesn't actually own the house but they're renting a house and would like to share with another woman, then obviously tenancy law applies as mm-hmm. as mutual tenants. If it's someone who is owning the house, then it's more of a boarding agreement, I think, under the law is what it's called. But if anyone's interested, have a look on our website, because it's got the range of different scenarios and mm-hmm. and which laws apply in those scenarios.
Yeah, because unfortunately I drew up an agreement with a woman. We were trying to get it to be similar to the tenancy, giving me a lot more time of notice to be able to find my next place. But when we took it to the tribunal, when the time came and we needed to be able to resolve the dispute, which we weren't able to do with an outside facilitator, so we ended up using the tribunal. The tribunal went back to say, well, because you're, you know, this, the tenancy agreements don't exist
don't
here.
Apply.
And
yeah.
your agreement says one thing, it's not the law. The law actually gives the homeowner the right. And so what we had written in was 60 days for me as notice to be able to leave, and what I ended up getting was 2 weeks.
Mm.
So the agreement that I signed, which looked good on paper, the law didn't uphold it.
Yeah, you do need to be careful there. There is really good advice also on Government Tenancies website. And we maybe in the show notes, we can put some links to that, because it also spells out all these different types of scenarios and which laws apply.
In my case, the adjudicator was, 2 weeks is all you're going to get, which wasn't enough time for me to find another place to live.
That's really rough.
So just to let people know that making those relationships before an agreement comes into place, or those ongoing conversations once one is in place, is key to the security. Because the law, if the law can't cover you, then it's actually the relationship.
That's right. But knowing where you stand legally, I think, is really important. Hopefully the home sharing relationships we've got set up at the moment don't go down that track. I've got good hopes that they're all off on the right track. So,
or that they'll seek out an outside facilitator
if they need it,
who will assist them to come to an agreement that works for both parties, not just for the homeowner.
Right.
In my case, the homeowner didn't want to go with that outside facilitator.
Yeah.
So we're going to move into just a few other bits, because we have the website that people can go to, which is, can you give the URL for that?
Yep, so it's homeshareforher.nz, all one word, homeshareforher.
And as you said, a lot of resources on there that folks pull ideas from.
Yeah.
So in terms of yourself, tell us a fun, obscure fact about yourself.
A fun fact about myself. I've got lots of hobbies, far too many hobbies, actually. But one of my hobbies is beekeeping. And so I've got a couple of beehives at home. And I find them really fascinating, watching the bees and watching. I think it really appeals to me. The level of organisation and cooperation in a beehive is just incredible. Actually thinking about what a home is and the cooperation that's required there, there is a little bit of a parallel with what you see in a beehive.
Oh, that's neat. I used to do beekeeping, and it's very interesting to be able to be so close to the bees and watch them.
That's right. And they've all got their role, and they know what they're doing. From the moment they come out of their cell as a brand new little bee, they just get to work straight away as soon as they're out of their little cell. It's amazing. And the communication between them.
What's the most interesting home you've ever seen or been in?
I've been really fortunate to have travelled to some different places around the world. And obviously when you're in other cultures, in other climates, you see homes that are very different from what we have here, and people living in lots of different ways. So I've seen some amazing homes of all shapes and sizes when I've travelled. But actually, I thought what I would actually like to talk to is something much closer to home, very close to home for me, actually, which is right next door to me. My brother, William Samuels, is quite an amazing architect, and he and his partner have built an amazing studio home on some land next door to us. So this is on land that they've leased from my dad. And William, as an architect, has designed their home not as a tiny home, but as a studio home. So a bit more like what you'd expect from a studio apartment, except that it's standalone and in a semi-rural area. It's 42 square metres, so it's pretty compact. And it's a single bedroom living space. It's got a loft, beautiful kitchen, a little bathroom. It's got everything you need in the minimal amount of space. It's so well designed, there's not a centimetre of space that hasn't been thought about in that house. And they built it on a very small budget, and because they're leasing the land, they didn't have the cost of having to buy land. So they really built it as a model for a way to live in a small, sustainable, affordable home. And because it's on leased land, it is fully relocatable, so it can be detached into two different modules, and in the future they could add additional modules on if they want to make it bigger. So yes, I think that's very close to home, but quite an interesting little house. It has been written up a bit, and we can also put in a link to his website where there's lots of pictures of it as well. I think they really thought about all the elements that go into making housing unaffordable and really breaking it down into, well, how do you deal with the land cost? Well, you can lease land. How do you deal with the cost of construction? Well, you can make it much smaller if it's well designed. They built it themselves, so they didn't have the labour costs. It was really just the materials they were paying for. And so I'm sure it was quite a labour of love, but it's an incredible little home.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. And so a little plug for William there as well.
That plug.
Absolutely.
The proud sister.
Give a wonderful, what a nice sister. We'll put that in the show notes as well. And let's see, any books and podcasts or shows that you think it can be related to housing, but it doesn't have to be, that you'd recommend?
Okay. I do read quite a lot of books, none specifically about housing recently. The family and I have actually been watching a TV series that we've really loved, which is Forgo Flatting on TVNZ, which is about four young men with disabilities sharing a home. And it's a really feel-good series and hilarious at times. So really recommend that for some fun family watching.
But oh,
also with some great sort of messages around housing and some of the challenges, I guess, and opportunities for people with disabilities. I do listen to a few different podcasts. I've been enjoying at the moment, there's an Australian one called The Imperfects, which is interviews with a range of interesting people on their struggles in life and their imperfections, and on a range of really interesting topics, actually, things like belonging in community, dealing with uncertainty, anxiety, managing your boundaries, and interviews with quite a few well-known people actually talking about some of those topics. So I've been enjoying that one. Having grown up in Australia and spent most of my life in Australia, I do sometimes really miss my Australian girlfriends. And so there's another Australian one that I like called Chat 10 Looks 3, which is, it's just a banter really between two really intelligent, funny Australian women, Annabelle Crabb and Lee Sales, who are both political commentators, but they talk about culture and books and podcasts and films and that sort of thing.
And any books?
I've just finished one. I tend to read fiction mainly, but I've just finished one recently called The Bookwoman of Troublesome Creek, which is by Kim Michelle Richardson, which is a novel set in the Great Depression in Kentucky, in the Appalachian Mountains. And about a bookwoman. So back in those days, so I think it's based on fact, even though it's a novel, which the bookwomen were women who rode horses or mules around delivering library books to people in remote places. And in this case, the main character is a Kentucky Blue, and they were a group of people in Kentucky who had blue skin genetically through a genetic disorder, I think. I really, really enjoyed that one. What other books do I enjoy? I've been on a bit of an Ann Patchett, I guess, going through a series of her novels recently. So The Dutch House, Tom Lake, Commonwealth, State of Wonder. I really enjoy Haruki Murakami, a Japanese novelist. He writes in sort of a magical realism type style, often with cats as characters in his books. I love cats, so...
That's great.
And he's got a new book coming out this month, I think, and he hasn't released any for 3 years, so I'm looking forward to that.
Wow. So, and I see what you mean by you have a lot of hobbies. This is a really diverse range of things.
And then there's another little book that I thought, oh, I must mention this one because it's a favourite of mine. It's called The Art of Frugal Hedonism by Adam Grubb and Annie Razor Rowland. And it's sort of written in a sort of humorous type way, but it's a guide to spending less while enjoying everything more. So it's got lots of little ideas about how to enjoy life's simple pleasures, practical ideas as well as some mindset shifts.
It's all a bit of a step back from commercialism which is always a good thing
absolutely.
To do. I'm reading a book called Tough Broad about older women into their 70s and 80s who are doing really amazing adventures. And so that's really inspiring me. I really like to have those older role models isn't about getting old is slowing down at all. These women are actually speeding up. So, and that's in the local library, Tough Broad. I always love sharing these inspirational books and ways that we have of learning new things about the world or mindsets. I really hope that folks are going to have another think about how to do housing, how to share, in fact, spaces, you know, how we can open up our homes in different ways. I have a bedroom that's really too small to be able to share with a woman through a home share program, but I do offer it up to couch surfers.
Oh, great. Well, that's another way
of doing it. So that's my way of being generous with my space, getting new people coming in. And because I'm near the Abel Tasman, I'm actually a good place where a lot of people want to use as a base. And so the inquiries are starting to pour in now, and it gives me people anywhere from one day up to 3 or 4 days. And it's really like they're old friends. It's not... no money exchange, nothing is asked of them to help anywhere. Many do offer help, and we always do meals together. And that's been the blessing of having my own home with this small little spare bedroom, is being able to offer to travelers my space and learn about the world through them. And then I know when I go traveling, I'll have done my deed of hosting, and then I can...
and hopefully the favor will be reciprocated.
Look for all the other folks offering. It's definitely much more than a couch. Most people are offering bedrooms, but that I can go traveling and have that same hospitality.
Oh, that's wonderful. It sounds like it's quite enriching for you having... those people as well.
I've had such a great diversity of people, and it's been really enriching.
Hopefully anyone listening to this who's interested in this sort of thing, do check out homeshareforher.nz. Have a think about how you might want to share your home.
Great. Thank you so much, Chloe.
Great. Thanks, Ola.